We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
But we get these nights in the National Hockey League schedule now where there's a lot of movement. Like you get a Tuesday night and there's crazy jockeying in the standings. 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Now, welcome to YouTube, our channel there, as well as all the podcast platforms. There was all kinds of jockeying last night.
It's tough to keep track. I can watch four games at a time. And I needed to watch seven or eight last night. It was hard. It was hard to watch. And then, between what's going on with Anaheim playing another great game, Seattle with the big lead, and then Nashville coming back. Wild card in the West, Darren, is going to be a race until the end of the
season. Well, LA's still in it, right?
Well, LA's still in it. Winnipeg is still in it. When you look at it, they're 5 points out. And if they still have the, win a heck of a lot more than they lose. But, Seattle losing at home last night after having a 2-0 lead versus Nashville, who's one of those teams that's chasing them, that was a tough loss for the Kraken. And here we are, we're in the stretch one. Teams have between 20 and 18 games to play, and it's going to be a sprint to the final.
Yeah, we're at that point of the season, though, where you're starting to look at, okay, how many wins will it take to get us in?
Yeah, yeah.
You can do the math on that now.
Well, as I've told the story many times, and we've even asked him on this show, Kenny Holland is on the back of a napkin every morning at breakfast. He's the guy saying, okay, if we do this, okay, we need 93. We need 94. Okay, today it's 92. Well, I wonder now if the number's not 90 in the West. I really do.
I was looking at it last night, and 90 might be that number.
Yeah, well, so that's a challenge.
Would it be
that's
a good thing or a bad thing if the number was in the 80s?
I don't think it matters. I think I don't think it matters when, all we're going to hear is the lament from the Eastern Conference teams. That's all you're going to see is you're going to hear the lament. Well, there's nobody in the Pacific Division would be in the playoffs. That may be true, but they play a different type of schedule too. They play different teams. They don't play the same teams.
The Pacific
teams
won't have to deal with that Central until the third round.
Well, one team in the Pacific. I think one team in the Pacific will. I'm one of those guys. I think we're going to see 5-3 Central in the West. Mm. I think there's going to be five teams from the Central Division in the Western in the Western Conference playoffs.
You could see five from the Pacific though too.
Yeah. No, I don't think you.
Look
I don't
at
think
it.
Utah,
it's really
I don't think
possible.
Utah's catchable. It's possible, but not probable.
Well, you have Winnipeg still in, I have five teams from the Pacific still
in.
Yeah,
and that's fair. Sure, that's fair. But yeah, it's crazy for that wild card, and then you look at the East, people in Columbus are looking and watching what the Bruins are doing every day, and all of a sudden, the Islanders down 3-0 in St. Louis last night, and in the end, they win the game. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
What about Ottawa? I'm surprised you're humming if you've got Winnipeg in.
Yeah, but it's all based on schedule. I haven't studied the Ottawa schedule enough, I guess. I mean, Ottawa definitely has a chance, which is why, which is the surprise of, and we haven't talked about it much since last Friday, is what Washington did and why they did it. Because when we had Spencer on, he said we can go 16-7 and get into the playoffs. Well, They had a better chance of going 16-7, I think, than Winnipeg do on 16-4. And yet they, you know, they get rid of John Carlson just because he won't sign a new contract. So
yeah, and the prices were high, right?
Very high. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why not?
And you know, and then, you know, the whole, when you talk about what's going on in the Pacific, the whole concept of those three teams, Anaheim, Vegas, and Edmonton. You know, it's funny how the world changes so quickly. Edmonton wins in Vegas, wins in Denver, and all of a sudden, that's a three-horse race. That is going to be a challenge for the rest of the way.
Second place in the Pacific Division right now. Let's get into goaltending because there's some drama around the Oilers' net right now.
You think?
Even more so last night after the game in Colorado and a violent collision, Nathan MacKinnon with Connor Ingram. So Steve Alkett, our goaltending buddy, over at MSG and Clearsight Analytics, and that is a resource if you can tap into what Steve's doing there. It's the elite of all the analytics, and he'll bring some of it, his data points to us. But that collision between MacKinnon and Ingram, where blame lies, should have been a 5-minute major. We'll get into that, plus all the goaltending talk on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to four games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
This is always one of my favorite shows whenever we get Steve Alkett to join us, John. A little goaltending talk. Just sit back and enjoy the expertise, okay?
just before we get any further, just go ahead and take 50 minutes to talk about masks, okay? Just talk about masks. That's all Millard cares about. That's all he cares about, masks.
I learned the last time I was on with you guys that John's son was a goalie, so now this just goes to another level, this conversation.
Well, we are Allaire clones in this house. So
there you go.
Benoit, to me, is number one. So we did 5 years at his camps in just outside of Montreal with my son Jake, and he made the game fun.
Hey, John, do you think there's a place for goalie coaches in the Hockey Hall of Fame? Will we get there someday?
I would hope so, but at the same time, you know, is there a place for lifetime assistant coaches?
Right.
And
I
so
think it's different. Goaltending is different, isn't it?
I think it is, but you know, there's other people will ask the question. I mean, Benoit is such a specialist. Here's the thing, Steve. If you really believe in it, and I'm not an advocate for the Hall of Fame the way they do things, but if you really believe in it, nominate them. Yeah. You know, the nomination process is open to the public at a certain time of the year. You know, all you have to do is create a little bit of a research and have people who know him and love him endorse it. And then get one of the 17 members of the committee to say, yeah, that's a good idea. I will nominate him. So why not?
Okay. Well, that's step one.
I tell you what, we will take that to conversation offline and we'll run with it.
I think we should.
All right. Three-man wolf pack. Well, we'll include Kevin Woodley from In Goal in that because he's been pounding that drum for a while along with Steve.
Absolutely.
So we got a task. We got some homework with us. You saw the game last night, Edmonton and Colorado. Just curious on your take on MacKinnon's collision with Ingram and the 5-minute major.
I would start with, it's the only way, in my opinion, that a goalie can get concussed. I took every hard shot you can imagine as a backup goalie off the mask. I don't think that you can get your first concussion from a shot off the mask. But in speaking to Mike Richter over the years, he did have second and third concussions off of shots because you're more susceptible after that first hit. I'm worried about that because when you get a concussion, Darren, it's close to me. I lost my two best men due to CTE, and that's Steve Montador and Scott Page last year. And Chris Nowinski, he's ahead of the brain bank in BU, the institute there. And twice he was able to get their brains quickly and have them scanned. And the reason why I bring this up is the first thing he said to me, Chris, in 2015, after Steve Montador passed away, was, "Do you have children?" I said, "Yes." He said, "If they ever have a concussion, they must go a full year without having a second, or the susceptibility for seconds, thirds, fourths, it's just too high." So my quick on that is, I just hope to God that he didn't have a concussion. The contact itself, I think it's a part of the game. You're driving the net. And we know as goaltenders, at that moment, you can go forward. And I call it the Tim Thomas, because he would always meet the play. You can meet the play and cut it off, and that's going to take contact. Or you can ease off and butterfly and be passive and possibly get scored on. I don't mind the play as far as it's two guys going in for a puck. So I'm more concerned with a concussion. I can't help but go there when I see contact like that at a headshot for a player or a goalie.
Tell you what, when you have somebody of the magnitude of Nathan MacKinnon and those thighs, because let's face it, they are gargantuan. When those thighs hit your head, that is full force. Yeah. That's the thing. That is full force. And then Connor's head hits the ice as well.
Yeah.
So that's the double whammy.
Yeah, that's usually a sign that he's out on the way down. Yeah. So yeah.
I just don't remember seeing a guy get cut in a long time.
Pressure cut, right? Though, wasn't it? It's a pressure cut, though, right?
But that's unusual with the mask these days. Pressure cuts don't usually happen.
You know what, Darren? Dan Fritchie, a teammate of mine when I was with the Rangers, on a one-timer from the slot in practice, I got 12 stitches in my chest, through my chest pad off of a one-timer pressure cut. I'm in practice, and all of a sudden, I feel something running down my leg. I skate over to Rammer, and I go, "Rammer, something's going on." He looks at the inside of my skate. My entire sock is red. And that was through the upper body, which I never thought could happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old SK-2000s, we were cut all the time.
Right.
The masks are supposed to prevent that. So the trickle-down effect, Tristan Jarry, if he has to go in, how does he handle this already going through a tough situation?
You know, I think there's five things that right now in the NHL that everybody has to cue in on for preparing their goalies going into the playoffs. And one of them, it's already too late. Did you have a great summer? we're way past that. And I'll start with it though quickly, because I think the summer is where you build your season. And you're trying to keep all of your technique that you build over the summer into the season. The next step is for your goalie coach to keep you aligned. Now, alignment to me is, it's an amazing thing because of the flights and the bus. There's times, Darren, where, and I just created a few exercises when I didn't have a goalie coach to check my own alignment. And it would be something like, I'd stand on the blue line, I'd put a puck in front of me in the neutral zone, and I'd square up to that puck, and then I'd check my feet. And if my toe caps were 2 inches ahead of the blue line on my right skate and maybe an inch behind the blue line on my left skate, but I felt square, that's not a good sign, because my toe caps aren't square. And there's another way to check alignment. If you put a hockey puck at center ice and you put a net on the red line, the middle bar is lined up to that puck, you can then check your feet when you square up to that puck. And there should be an equal distance from your left skate to the red line as well as your right skate to the red line. And sometimes you can lose sideways alignment. I think goalie coaches, guys, that's their job every day, to make sure you have proper alignment, because it's the one thing as a goalie in game action, in practice action, you can't see for yourself if you're not aware of it, or you can't feel it. Because you think you're square, guys, and there's issues with your hips, things are out, you can see your trainer get adjusted. But I think that's the major purpose of a goalie coach. So, you know, step number one, Darren, when I see Jarry right now, his alignment's off. And I think you have to spend time just with a little bit of video work and just make sure that he is on there, because you can't do your job positionally if you don't have alignment, because that's one very important piece to positioning. And I don't know if you guys want to hear my other three.
Sure. Yeah. Let's go.
Okay. So the overuse of the reverse VH, I feel like it always deserves a proper explanation to describe what a reverse VH is to the common fan. And that's the challenge with speaking goalie on TV, right, John?
Yeah.
You know, it's I'm with you, man.
It's so annoying.
Doug McClain calls it the reverse VHS. So.
So I feel like teams now, and Darren, your team that you cover, the Golden Knights, it's a good example because Mark Stone, when healthy, and he's to the right of the goalie on the power play, he's a righty passer, and he can look across the crease to Dorofeev for that one-timer off the power play seam. And those go in one every three times. The pass that goes to the slot, because you sometimes have the option there, I think it's Hurdle for you guys.
Hurdle, yeah.
Yep. Those are one every seven. But if he goes up to Eichel on the same side of the ice, if Eichel's on the dot, same side of the ice, those are like one every 14. So you're looking statistically, I think, at probability of chance, but I like to take it back a step and say, why is the goalie in the reverse right now? He's going to hurt himself on any movement laterally or even up to Eichel back to feet. So we're seeing any night right now when you're watching the NHL, it is an abuse and overuse of the reverse VH. And I know that goalies and goalie coaches talk about it, about getting beat on the shot, but I'm more specific on the pass. Even when the pass is coming from below the goal line to the point, and then everything funnels to the net for a point shot, the goalie is then recovering from a down position into crouch, so they never see over the screen. Mm-hmm. There are several areas where I would be coaching right now these goalies before getting into the playoffs to be more predictable for yourself about when to use it, when not to use it, because it's killing your ability to move and do your job and get there set. The whole Ben Ware Allaire thing, John, is set your feet, set your eyes. And right. you're doing that late by coming out of a reverse when it's not necessary to already be down in it.
And so again, for the layman, because that's us, what does the reverse VH do for you on a positive side in that position? Where is it to guard the post? What is it?
So here's where it all started. The genesis of it was 2012-13, coming out of that lockout year. Bobrovsky was the first guy to do it, because I remember the next summer going to camp with Ray Emery, our rest in peace to Ray. And we were talking about bringing it into his game, using it, not using it. Why are we doing it? And I did a little bit of research. And what happened was Ian Clark had a zero goals against on Bobrovsky on all net plays, net drives, wraparounds, walkouts, step outs, all of those tight jam plays. They eliminated the chaos around the net because he was never in transition down. He was setting up in a reverse VH, and that allowed him to get a consistent seal. So it had success for that purpose. Now, John, we know, because you know, John, you're a goalie dad, the wraparound is not a grade A scoring chance. So all the time that we spend on this reverse business, I think, is overuse and overtaxing on hips and knees. Just look at Thatcher Demko.
Doesn't that necessarily speak to Sergei Bobrovsky himself, as opposed to the actual philosophy of how to play the play?
I think it's a copycat game in a way, and a lot of goalies and a lot of goalie coaches saw success with Bob doing it, and everybody brought it into their game over the next 3 years. And now when you go and watch even the gold medal goal for the U.S., in my opinion, was misuse of the reverse VH. Binnington was down in it before there was a threat at a net play. He was down early. He wasn't in the zone. And then the pass across from Werenski to Hughes, mm-hmm. he's late on it. He's late to right. get across. He doesn't get his feet set. He doesn't do objectively what we've been trying to do for 20 years, which is beat the pass, set your feet, set your eyes, make your next save right. with posture.
I want to loop back to that goal, because that was on my list of things to ask you. But 4 and 5 on your five things.
Okay, so 4, it's a funny one, but it's a real epidemic in the NHL, and it's flinching. closing your eyes. I know I can tell by your face. I have this problem every summer. I'm introduced to new goalies. And in first practice, what I do, Darren, is I have them on their knees and we have pucks 15 feet away from them off the angle. And I have a GoPro set up behind the puck and we just shoot pucks at 75%. You can shoot anywhere. The shooter can pull it and put it anywhere. But the flinching is the mechanism of just an object coming towards a dangerous area, just around your ear, shoulder, elbow. Goalies are trying to use their shoulders and elbows to make saves, but their eyes are closing and the puck leaves them. And now they're trying to open and find them. And I've got a lot of video of NHL goalies when they're going through their weaker parts of their season, just closing their eyes too frequently off the release. Now, why does that happen? Do you remember last time we met, I told you that my coach was John Brophy?
Yes, sure.
Okay. So John Brophy was my coach, my first year pro, guys. Can you imagine that? That was my indoctrination to pro hockey.
You really want to do this, kid?
Now, you wouldn't believe this. Darren, John, this is what John Brophy was like in practice. He would straddle the blue line and he would be down in a crouch and he would yell at the players as they came over the blue line. Hit it. He did not allow wrist shots and snapshots in practice and shooting drills, just slap shots. Okay. And I'm telling you guys, I was getting smoked in practice. We had a player on our team named Rocket Rod Taylor, legendary East Coast leaguer, no tape on his stick. Pucks are just smoking me up top. We get into a game on the weekend against the Greenville Growl. I'll never forget it. Down the right side, slap shot on the ice. I felt my eyes close. I flinch. It goes five hole on the ice. And I know the next day in practice, I've got a problem. I've got to figure out how to get over this flinching where I have no shot of getting out of the East Coast League. I did two things. I went to Home Depot. I grabbed some nails, a hammer, and some wood, and I practiced at home just hitting the top of the, hitting the nail, the head of the nail without flinching my eyes at all, because the natural reaction is to just kind of shutter your eyes a little bit. The next thing I did was I talked to Scott Boggs, our trainer. I put a new cage on my mask because I had read when I was a teenager that Hasek used to do this from the hash marks where he just takes shots to the face and just watch it all the way in. What I do now with my goalies as a coach is I Velcro my iPad to the ceiling in the locker room. I put my goalie in their helmet as well as their upper body. I stand on a bench and I drop pucks from the top of the bench. And the iPad can record some of my worst goalies, the puck hasn't even left my fingers yet and their eyes are closing. The good ones have their eyes wide open. I have a goalie that is a baseball player and he's deciding whether he's going to be a D1 athlete in baseball or hockey. And this guy's eyes never close. You know, he plays the hot corner. He's a third baseman. He's unreal. And you wouldn't believe how much more productive practice can be by just making sure that the eyes are disciplined and open throughout the release.
Well, I thought flinching was long gone.
No, it comes and goes. Comes and goes. You know, there are moments during the season, Darren, I just told you, I got a compression shot through my chest, stitches. You don't feel great the next couple of shots. You know, you got to get back to it and in your own head a little bit and scream at yourself to keep your eyes open. And that's a conscious decision every day in practice. And I think it's often overlooked.
You just gave me a great idea for a montage of close-ups of goaltenders in a game.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You'll see it, John. You'll see it.
But just, you know, with technology now, super slow-mo, if you had a mask shot and the cameraman was good and he could stay with the goaltender's head, do it for 10 minutes and see how many times the goaltender's eyes did flinch.
I had it with Vladar when we were in Chicago Steel, and it was something we talked about when he was a teenager. We covered his game on Monday. Pucks were coming off of him in the first period, and I guarantee you there was a little bit of flinching there. He just wasn't receiving the puck. He wasn't coming into his own. You could see it. And it also has a look, John. When you see a goalie not able to find the puck after they make a save, it's always because their eyes were not open and sharp through the release.
And yet we always, again, those of us on the outside always blame, well, he can't see it through the mask. We blame the mask.
No, that's not-
we blame the mask for it.
Well, I get it a lot. You wouldn't believe it, John, especially in practice with teenage goalies, that, you know, they'll say, you know, I didn't see that one. And I'll say, hey, listen, there's a reason why you didn't see it. You know,
yeah.
I couldn't find the rebound. I was like, look, we got to talk about this. We get in the video room and oftentimes they get embarrassed, but I give them my story. I'm like, hey, man, I've been there. I played for John Brophy. I'm telling you, you know.
Then if they're a teenager, they have to Google John Brophy. So,
we can only have these conversations amongst us. But look, the last one, guys, it's posture and patience. And posture to me is, you know, it's an easy one to see. It's through the release when the player is about to shoot it. Can you still hang in there and have your feet under you and keep that really good form with your chest angle? So I think that's on top of the alignment one for the goalie coach to oftentimes just enforce, keep your feet under you, keep your posture, then you can play goal.
I'm used to flinching. Usually it's from John, not shots, though.
Yeah. So two quick questions, because Darren always asks the question, why aren't there more trades at the deadline for goaltenders? And I think you kind of answered it a little bit through some of your stuff. How much of a challenge would a guy like Jari have going from Andy Chiodo to Peter Aubrey? Is that a challenge?
I know both of those guys very well, and I don't think the challenge is at all that communication with your goalie coach, change of system. You know what it is, John? Goalie coaches, I talk to more than half the league of them. And I know that the constant message is that's a summer adjustment. If it's anything, that's a summer adjustment. Very rarely is it an in-season adjustment unless it's something that we've got to get over this or we're in trouble. You know, I think that you're always trying to keep these amazing athletes at their best because they know when they're at their best. You know, it's actually a good example would be back to Vegas, Aiden Hill, right? Like, I think that when we see goalies at their best, they go on a run like Aiden did when he won a Stanley Cup. Aiden, you could say right now he's having a hard time with breakaways because he's faced 21 breakaways this year. He's allowed 9 goals. When you're about 50% on breakaways and those are swing moments in games, I would say that for Aiden, that's number one for him. I would really be focusing on taking a lot of breakaway reps in practice. The way that goalies in the NHL get more confidence on breakaways, take more breakaways. Now, when he won the Stanley Cup, guys, he went 16 for 16. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sunday's game, Darren, against Edmonton, they scored 2 breakaway goals on him, right? Pod Colson's breakaway, which was the first of the two, you can see that Aiden's feet are in the blue paint when Pod Colson gets to the bottom of the hash marks. And I know that what NHL goalies need, what they require to be successful on breakaways, is they have to have their feet in the white ice. It's quite honestly, it's the middle of your skates at the top of the crease or heels when the player gets to what I call the decision spot, the bottom of the hash marks with the puck. Because when you are there, your gap now is really tight. If they choose to deke, you will always finish with your pads above the post. So you close angle, they can't elevate on you. And you're also discouraging them from shooting because you're on top of them. And Aiden had his skates in the blue paint. Pod Colson, it's a game of inches, right, guys? If you remember that goal, Darren, it barely got past his right skate, just slid by him. And then the next breakaway, he goes for a poke check. Why does he go for the poke check? Because he doesn't believe in his breakaway ability. And, you know, that's the game for me. It's a game of inches, but it's won or lost in practice.
That's a much more detailed breakdown than mine on the Pod Colson goal, which I blame fresh ice. It was 2 minutes and it just barely slid across the line. Like if that was 4 minutes left of the period, there's no way that thing goes in.
That's a men's league excuse.
Look at me.
One more thing on Jerry last night. How important were those 2 saves in the last 35 seconds of the second period?
I apologize. I was covering Rangers Calgary last night, so I didn't see his final.
Okay, he comes in, and I'll tell you what. When Ingram goes down, you can hear the gasp across the continent with the Oiler fan base. That Oh no, Tristan has to go in. because Ingram had been pretty good through the game. But in that 35-second window, he made two really strong saves. Really mm-hmm. strong saves. One was a great pad save. The other one was he tracked the puck and found it and gloved it. It was really good to end that 35 seconds of the second period. Mentally, how important is that?
You know, okay, so this morning, as you guys can imagine, getting from New York to home last night, I get in around 12:30. And when I wake up in the morning, I've got ClearSight Analytics to work on. I've got goal reviews. We've got to get client reports. So I work from 6 a.m. to coming on air with you guys. And I did see the MacKinnon net drive, of course. I reviewed different shots on goal. Now, I didn't come across that, but here's what I thought when I saw the box score and I was looking at the play. I was like, you know what? This could be the best thing for Jari. Why? Because he went into a game where there was no preparation necessary. There was no thinking. And I think that a lot of guys can get out of their own way by just playing again, just going in there and competing. What do you do when you get thrown into a game? You get in there and you play on instinct. And when you have results, John, like you're telling me Jari did last night, well, you can carry that to the next game because you can just remind yourself, you know what? Maybe I should just go out there and compete and play on instinct because I'm good enough to do that. I'm good enough to be an NHL goalie at this level and not overthink it. You know, I had this amazing story Sunday, Avon Old Farms, which is one of our popular prep schools here in Connecticut. It's where Brian Leetch went. It's where Jonathan Quick went. The goalie there, Will Baggett, he's the backup goalie. He was on the bench most of the season, played six games all year. Quality goalie. He's going to be a future starter and a college goalie. But he had to ride the bench this year. We talked all year about staying ready for your moment. The starting goalie, John, got injured 2 minutes into the championship game against the best offensive team in the league, St. Mark's. He goes into this championship game 2 minutes into the game. He makes 48 saves on 50 shots and wins the championship for Avon. He just went out there and played on instinct. Would his result have been different if he had to think about the start for 3 days? I think so.
You know, well, that kind of answers my question.
Yeah. And I think you can get out of your own way that way, John, because I get asked a lot, you know, have you ever, you know, been in a situation where you can flick the switch and turn it on? And we've seen Bobrovsky been able to do that. I was telling this story on the Kipper and Bourne podcast yesterday. Steve Sterling was my coach in the minors for Bridgeport. He introduced me to my wife. I love the man. Okay. Mm-hmm. And one thing that he wanted to do with me was push my buttons before the playoffs one year. He brought his son up, who was a goalie in the East Coast League, and played 10 games over me down the stretch before he gave the net back to me with three games to go, where I went out there like my hair was on fire because I was going into a contract year and this was my team, and he pissed me off. And I think we played better pissed off. I went out there, we won the first round, got in deep in the second round, and I played great for about 6 weeks, you know, but my point is that I think a lot of guys, John, they get comfortable and you got to push buttons. I think that with Dallas, they have a goalie decision to make before the playoffs. You could say the same about Minnesota to a certain degree. You could say the same about, Edmonton, we're talking Edmonton. There's definitely a few teams out there that don't know for sure if they're going to run one guy or not. But it's okay sometimes to piss the other guy off. Braden Holtby got pissed off. He went out there and played amazingly well after Grubauer didn't successfully fulfill what the responsibilities were to be a number one in the playoffs. We've seen it.
We'll push more buttons when we continue with Steve Valiquette on 100% Hockey with Millard and Chen.
You always push my button. What are you talking about? You're always doing
that. I wish there was an easy button here.
Never.
Car shopping should be exciting, not exhausting. That's where Car Gurus comes in. They have advanced search tools, unbiased deal ratings, and price history, so you know a great deal when you see one. It's no wonder that Car Gurus is the number one rated car shopping app in Canada. When you're car shopping on your phone, it shouldn't be a maze. You need to see all the information. With the Car Gurus app, you can. Powerful search tools that you see deal ratings, price history, and dealer reviews on listings all in one place. And you can turn on real-time price drop alerts so you never miss a great deal. Car Gurus connects you with trusted dealerships when you're ready. ensuring a transparent, hassle-free buying process. Buy your next car today at cargurus.ca. Make sure your deal is the best deal. That's cargurus.ca. cargurus.ca.
Just going back to something you mentioned, you said Dallas got a goalie decision. People would be surprised at that.
Well, John was last year when I said that too.
Well, yeah, and by the way, the guy that you picked Colorado to win that series. Just a reminder.
I did, but it was
you
close.
Mackenzie Blackwood. You picked Mackenzie Blackwood over Jake Oettinger.
I didn't. I still get worried about Jake for the long-term run, the four rounds. You know what, guys? I thought this was going to come up, and I wanted to make example of the Western Conference Final last year because Edmonton and Dallas, this to me is what playoff hockey is all about. When I think we loosely say it's a game of inches, it's a game of scoring chances. And I think that a lot of goalies in the NHL, very capable when you get them at the right 6 weeks of their career. And this Dallas-Edmonton series, listen to this last year, guys. The expected goals were 13.36 for Dallas and 13.88 for Edmonton. But Edmonton outscored Dallas in that series 22-11. 22-11. The high danger chances were nearly identical. 31 for Dallas, Edmonton Oilers 33. But Edmonton scores 13 goals and Dallas scores 7. I just think that when the margins are this thin, you're going to have to, in some cases, play the goalie that can stop more of the grade A scoring chances because all things are equal. Both teams are equally elite at that point when you get to the final four. And I think teams are just looking for the goalie that's playing at his best. And let's just say it's not flinching. They've got their posture. They're positionally using the reverse VH well. And I think that it's just amazing to me that this is what every series looks like. It's, you want to talk parity? Parity is on the paper. I know that's not where the game is played, but it's always showing up that even. And it's what goalie, grade A chances go in one every three times. These are all great goalies. We could talk about every matchup. But the one point I want to make on DeSmith, he's a really good, I mean, elite in the last 5 years, goalie off the rush. And if that, and that's what Edmonton does. Edmonton plays you off the rush, but they also play you in zone with rush plays because they have forwards exiting the blue line and then coming downhill so frequently.
Those numbers on Jake from last year's series kind of puts a different spin on the narrative that people received on Pete DeBoer's comments.
I heard Pete on your show.
Yeah.
I think Pete's a great coach. Let's talk, like, Pete's a great coach. Guess what? In that moment, he got frustrated and he said what he was publicly feeling at that moment. I don't blame him for that comment, but Pete got himself fired with that comment. Mm-hmm. You can't go into the next season with your goalie after going there. Now, if I was in his shoes, believe me, it would have been on the end of my lips too. I would have been that close, you know, but that, I'm sure Pete would say the same thing.
Okay. So, just to be clear, you know, the traditional system is you go to the playoffs, you pick one goalie, you ride them.
Yeah.
Are you advocating that there should be more times where if you have an opportunity to change goalies when you feel that you need to, you should?
Yes. I think you need to recognize what you have, and you've got two really good goalies, but do you know who is going to give you the best chance to win based on the way you're seeing him stop pucks in practice every day, the way you've closely watched him in his last five starts? Who's on? One of them's on. You know, like, I go back to look at all the Stanley Cups we've seen over the last 20 years. I think Marc-Andre Fleury was very unproven in his first cup. Cam Ward, Antti Niemi, we just talked about Aiden Hill. There are enough examples of a guy that got really hot for a stretch. And if you can recognize who the hot guy is, I think that's the master level coach, because Buffalo's going to go either UPL or Alex Lyon. And right now, I took a lot of heat from the Buffalo fans yesterday because, you know, I was criticizing UPL's start on Sunday against Tampa Bay. But he's running all over the place. He's not playing his game. Alex Lyon, since the early December, is the best performing goalie in expected goals. There's something there. Look at the scoring chances. Watch him play. He's running hot right now. That's who you start. And then if he runs cold because he can't carry the load, that's okay. You've got a rested UPL who's been working on his game. The five things we talked about, well, the summer's too late, so make it four things. But, but you know, you can almost have a summer in season, guys. I've been talking to other analytics departments, and the view on goalies right now is they have a stretch of seven quality starts in them and then switch them out. I think a lot of teams, a lot of organizations are going to move to a model where you have three guys that during a season play them, get them going, get the other guy in, switch them out. It's time. Too many clear-sighted goals in practice, too many clear-sighted goals in games. You can see the data can back up what you're seeing with your eyes.
You mentioned practice a couple of times. There's
not
that much
practice. I know.
There's not much emphasis on practice performance. Like where what do you judge in practice? Because there's so many flow drills and then it's power play.
I would judge practice on the 30 minutes before everybody gets out there. I would never have my coaches shooting on my goalies. That would be one of my rules if I was running an organization. Part of the reason why is because the silhouette of the shooter, it's a false representation of hockey. Somebody in a tracksuit is not shooting on me when the puck drops at 7:05. I hate the look. Like, Darren, whether we know it or not, if we had mobile eye trackers on, we're looking at the puck with 70% of our focused intent, but we also see the shape and the silhouette of the knees and the elbows and the hands, and it has to be the same as what it looks like with a player in full gear. I would never allow a shooter to shoot on my goalies in the summertime in a tracksuit. I kick them off the ice 10 times out of 10. We'll do something else. I refuse to do it. So in those 30 minutes,
in the 30 minutes before practice, are you dragging two regulars out of the dressing room?
I'll tell you what Allaire did. Allaire said to me, Valley, two guys that are going to be career year guys this year. Who do you want them to be? And I was like, Dubinsky, Callahan. They shot for us all year. They all had career years. Every time. Every time. You can ask Benny. Every time he'd be like, who do you want? And I'd pick my buddies, you know, and everybody would have, because the players, they started to realize it after I retired, where now it used to be tumbleweed out there. Now there's a million guys out there working on their game. But I think it's the guys that closely work with the goalies that just tighten up their aim and their timing off their release and the way they disguise things and create rebounds when they should. There are so many intense practice drills that aren't formulaic that you can work into with just two guys and get enough out of it for your goalies. I just think that the practice time is really, this year with the condensed schedule, it's been well reported. It's few and far between. When I talk to goalies right now, they're like, Steve, you're talking about getting breakaways. Well, I'm not even getting on the ice. Well, that's a mistake. Yeah. You've got to find your way on the ice. You know, another thing Allaire would say to us, John, was coming off a day off, he'd always say to us, hey, be patient with yourself today. And you know, like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, you had a day off. Like, Benny, what are you talking about? Hey, you're a finely tuned instrument right now. Even one day off, you're going to notice a difference. Just be patient with yourself, play your game. And that would be something that he would reiterate every day with us coming off a day off.
Traded at the deadline. Why doesn't it work for goaltenders?
You know, I love the question. And I came up with that, I guess a week or so ago as I was going through different things. And I think it's a lot like the draft. Why don't we draft goalies in the first round? And I think there's such an unknown, such a voodoo to goalies that I think we're gun shy to do it. I do think that it works if it's done before Christmas. I got traded my senior year for to the Erie Otters, and I played a few games before Christmas. Sherry Bassin was very smart about getting me early. I remember it being a little wonky for a few weeks, and then I took off, and then we went on like an 18-0-2 stretch to finish the season. We had a great team in Erie that year, and it really dawned on me from that experience, I'm so grateful they brought me in before Christmas. I think the move happens before Christmas. There's definitely a common language that you have with your defensemen. And I think it's also with just the repetition of knowing positioning. Odd man rushes, for instance. I know that as a goalie, I can trust back pressure, and that makes me believe I can take extra ice or not. When I started with my Russian team in the KHL, guys, I'll never forget this experience, and this sort of paints a picture. I'm seeing my players back checking. I know that my defenseman is going to cut the ice in half. I can take more ice because I know it's going to be a half ice breakaway where the player that has the puck doesn't have access to cross. So I take an extra foot of ice time to take away the shot, and he crosses and he makes me look like a fool, and I'm way out in the white ice and he's putting it in the empty net. And I look up and I'm like, what the F just happened? Like, what was that? I look at the video the next day. My defenseman just straight legs it from the red line and lets the guy cut across. And I'm like, I can't read off that. I read off of the positioning of my teammates. I'm not reading off of what their options are because I don't know what the shooter's going to do, but I know what his options are based on the positioning of my teammates. Well, in that instance, I had to be more aware with where that defenseman was on the ice and what I could count on him for. And I think that's the learning experience a goalie has to put into fast forward. And it's just, it's a moving train for them that late in the season. And it's, I think, just learning your teammates. Box outs are important. And there's a lot of communication when handling the puck. I think you have to do it early. I think that's why guys don't do it early. One thing about the draft, though, you guys, I thought this was interesting just because I pulled it up. Only 7 goalies drafted in the first round over the last 10 drafts. And you know what's really interesting? They all hit. They're all good goalies. Jake Ottinger, Spencer Knight, Askarov, Wallstead, Kosa's coming for Detroit. But like, they actually, the NHL is doing a good job of when they do select in the first round to hit on a guy. They're not missing right now, not over the last 10 drafts at least.
Kosa's an interesting story because I think if you're a Red Wing fan, you've been waiting a while now.
Yeah.
You've been waiting a while, and up until this year, the Red Wings were having goaltender issues, and for the last 3 seasons, you're saying, well, where's Kosa? And they have been very patient with him, haven't they?
You know what, John? I have a view on this. I go back to the 2004-05 lockout. Fleury got an extra year in the minors. Ryan Miller did. I don't have the list in front of me, but there was definitely Cam Ward's another one, 6 or 7 future NHL goalies that became true number ones. They got one extra year in the minors that they most likely wouldn't have if there wasn't a strike that year. And the further part of the research showed me that the guys that played longest, most consistently as true number ones in the NHL all had at least 200 games in the American Hockey League or and in Europe. Like, right. Henrik Lundqvist played 236 games in Europe before he ever came to Madison Square Garden. And there are many examples of why that works. And I think the lockout did a lot of goalies a favor by making them stay in the minors one extra year. And I know that Detroit's thinking is more in line with mine, which is wait the extra year. You might look bad a little bit, but it's going to pay off in the long term. And I can't wait to see what this guy does in the NHL. I think it's going to be a long-term number one for them.
The golden goal by Jack Hughes. Did he miss his shot?
Yeah, that's a good one. I thought a little bit that it was definitely Binnington reading high glove
or
high.
Because there was toe up and there was the hand up. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I got a good story for you. So we were playing against Anaheim and it was my son's first game. So this moment is etched in my head. And I had a shutout in this game. So of course I remember that. But, you know, I know that we're up 1-0 in the second period and Mark Stahl gives a puck away and Todd Marchant receives the puck in the slot and he's coming right down the gut on me. And I'm saying to myself, you know, high glove all day here, like middle of the ice, high glove. And I'm getting ready and I'm dropping what I call the default move when I don't know for certain what I'm going to do, which is exactly what Binnington did. He dropped his right knee and it hits me in the blocker, and then I overextend this blocker save that I got lucky making the save on. After the game, Stan Fischler, and this is actually one point that if there are any players listening, This is one thing that irks me in the game. Have something ready for the Hall of Fame broadcaster in some cases, and give them something. Because John, I'm coming off the ice, and I said to myself, I see Stan. I've read all his books. I mean, the biggest hockey nerd there is, you can tell. So I'm coming off the ice and I see Stan and I'm thinking quickly on my feet. Okay, I got to give something to Stan. Like he deserves it. That's what I feel like the on-ice reporter, he deserves something. She deserves something. So
I love this.
The game. So we can grow the game. So Stan, of course, asked me about the save. We talk about the save and, you know, he's complimenting me on this little streak I'm having. And I say, Stan, you know what? A kick in the butt is this far away from a pat on the back, and I'm going to just stay where I am in my skates. And that's, and they, like, he loved it. He's, you know, and I just knew that that's why Stan and I had a good relationship that way, where he knew he was going to get something from me and I was going to be prepared for him. And it only takes 30 seconds to have 2 seconds of thought to put something together. But I'm telling you guys, it was a big save in my career. Shout out at home. They chanted my name that day, and boy, was I lucky to make that save.
By the way, you not only should be doing goaltender training, how about media training?
Yeah.
Because that is something in our game that is lacking right now.
I know, John. You know, we're easy stuff wrong.
We're too robotic, you know? And we're too robotic in our answers. And the culture that we have created within the game has allowed it to continue. Because we don't want to make anybody look bad, and I don't want to brag. That's not in our DNA. But to be able to tell a story, and actually listen to the question, those are art forms that we need to improve on.
I think we can brag as long as we're as willing to self-deprecate.
Yeah. Oh, right? No, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing how many players that you end up having conversations with when they're in their 40s. And you say, wow, why didn't he speak like that when he was 23?
Yeah.
Because now they've realized, hey, how much fun they had and what a great life they had. And now they don't have it anymore. But now they're prepared to tell the story about it.
We're in the entertainment business, and I don't think it stops when you get off the ice. I think the players just have to just remind yourself when you're getting off the ice, players, say something, and I don't know. It's good for the next generation, too.
Before we go, were you surprised Montreal didn't make an adjustment with their goaltending?
I don't know. I think that they know where they're at right now as an organization, and they just don't want to rush it. And they're not Philadelphia. I'm not talking about goaltending, but I'm just talking about overall team morale. Mm-hmm. Like we saw Philadelphia on Monday night, guys. I don't even know what kind of rebuild they're into right now. The morale was so low. And even Calgary last night, the morale was low. Edmonton, Montreal, the morale seems to me that it's high. And they can add in the offseason and keep their momentum going in the right direction without doing anything in net, because they've got young help coming and they've got, quite frankly, two guys that they could still work with at the NHL level in Dobish and Montembeau.
And Fowler in Laval is the future.
He's a stud.
Right?
He's a legit stud. You know, it's funny. I was on the ice with a goalie that I coached from the University of Michigan during Christmas. He was home and he said, what do you think of Fowler? And I was like, well, I haven't really seen much of him yet. And he's like, Montreal should call him up. He's a goalie. This guy's legit. And I always like hearing from the guys that I coach who they think are really good. And boy, was he right. That's Stephen Peck in the University of Michigan. He's doing a great job there as well.
Do you understand how the new e-bug system is going to work next year?
I don't, but I was once an e-bug, so I should know. And I signed a contract. There was 3 years where I signed a contract with the Rangers to be the e-bug. And you can imagine how bad MSG Networks wanted that to happen, John. They would have had me on the bench with a mic. But I don't know how it's going to work, but I do know there will be a lot of willing goalies. You know, you brought up Andy Kyoto earlier. I remember when Andy was about to retire in 2013 and we were talking about, you know, what comes next. He's like, I wish I could just be a number three. I'd go to practice. I'd work my ass off. I know guys think about it. Andy, he had a really remarkable career, he didn't have the long NHL career that he could have had. So it's guys like that. Andy Kyoto's got an amazing attitude. He works his ass off. He would have been amazing at helping with scoring, you know, showing the players where to shoot. That's the advantage the goalie in that position could be. It would be a mentor almost to the shooters. Almost,
but I think like they're conduit. Limited in the experience that the guys can have.
So would it, would it, is it the rule not any NHL experience? Is that right? Or
I think it's a certain number of games, professional experience.
Oh,
a certain number of games.
I think they're missing the mark there. You should open it up. There'd be a lot of guys that are willing to do it.
Absolutely.
Have you seen, isn't it true that catchers in baseball that are just bullpen catchers, aren't they making like $500,000 a year?
That's my dream job, Steve. Bullpen catcher. That's all I want to do.
Steve, amazing. We have to schedule this podcast around Millard's goalie schedule. This is, you know,
is
you
that
know
he, right. Are you oh, playing that yeah. much?
Hi, hi. I say, can we do the podcast at 11? You know, no, I got practice.
Are you serious?
Practice.
I get to see the guys every now and then.
They need me. Oh, my goodness gracious.
And it's fun. I'm the same way. I'll work my butt off in practice and build some confidence.
Keep your eyes open. Make sure your eyes are open.
Oh, yeah. I was taking notes there, man. For sure.
But more importantly, how does your mask look?
Oh, I have a good mask.
Okay, good.
Big mallard right there.
I worry about that stuff.
It's always so much fun. We go down different paths with you. Big fan of yours on MSG, and whenever we can catch you, thanks for this, pal.
Hey guys, anytime. Again, I'm a frequent listener, so anytime you need me, I'm coming on with you.
Steve Valiquette. We'll be back with more on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
I love that guy.
Well, as most people who are regular followers of this program know, I'm not a big analytics guy. But what I do think is, I think Steve makes them understandable for the layman, for the most part. And so that and that's the real challenge with analytics, creating contrast and making sure that the guy who doesn't play the position and the guy who isn't as he describes himself, as a hockey nerd, can enjoy some of the numbers and some of the analysis. That's what Steve did
in the Edmonton playoff series. Kind of, totally. He gave us,
totally. I mean, the five things that a goaltender has to, his 5-point checklist. I mean, and by the way, most of it's common sense. Mm. Most of it is pure and utter common sense.
I hadn't thought about the RVH and the impact on the golden goal, but he's right.
The reverse VH, I still don't understand the reverse VH. So.
Well, there's the VH, and then there's the reverse of it.
Or as our pal McLean says, the reverse VHS.
I like that, which is way easier to say than Betamax, right? Hey, you know, we never got a chance to touch on because of everything that was going on. But that Evgeny Malkin slash that cost him the 5 games.
Wow.
He got his pound of flesh and money's worth out of that thing. That's as bad as a hack I've seen in a long time.
That's an old school hack.
Yes.
That's what that is. That's an old school hack. That's a, you know, we used to run on Leafs TV. We used to run Leaf Classics, and you every once in a while you'd have a stick swinging. You know,
Bob McGill, by the way, would be the subject.
Well, no, but even before that, in the '60s, you know, when the guys were using the old Northlands that weighed about 23 pounds, those were stick swingings. And that's what that was. And you know what? From a Penguins perspective, not a Malkin perspective, from a Penguins perspective, you certainly hope the five games don't have huge residual effects on the Penguins making the playoffs. Now,
I do think star players need to do that every now and then. Not a club over the head, but get a little dirty and stand up for yourself.
Stand up for yourself, yes. Stand up for yourself.
That was the extreme.
Yeah, I would never advocate for a stick swinging. So, there's no place for it. But we see it's competitive nature, and sometimes players end up playing over the line. You know, we watch MacKinnon all the time. We watch McDavid all the time. Their competitive nature comes out, but it doesn't most of the time cross the line. What Malkin did was cross the line. So, by the way, you never asked me my thoughts on the MacKinnon Ingram collision.
Did you think it deserved a 5-minute major?
I did, but I wish there was a way not to give the game misconduct. Because that had more of an adverse effect on the game than anything else. The 5-minute major did not. But I wish that they could do it without giving the major, without giving the game misconduct.
The argument was Darnell Nurse pushed him in.
I don't buy that near as much. I don't think Darnell pushed him in as near as much as people think. I really don't. But I think it was, I mean, or if they want to give him a double minor. Right now, there's no way they could give him a double minor. But I wish that they could give him a major penalty, but not throw him out of the game. And then there's the TV side of me, because I still have a little bit of TV in me, saying here we have a national audience in the United States. We're coming off the Olympics. We're promoting two of the greatest players. I mean, the whole opening was MacKinnon versus McDavid. You know, and with 35 seconds to go in the second period, MacKinnon's gone. And so, and how much of an adverse effect of not having Nathan MacKinnon in the third period affected the outcome of the game? You know, and I know, the answer is a lot.
I just think you got to protect the goalies. And that sends a message of guys go hard at that all the time. And yeah, they'll wave off the goal. But there's not a penalty.
So based on that for you, you obviously don't think Nurse pushed him in either.
I don't think Nurse had as much of an impact on that play as people said. He touched him, but MacKinnon was still going close to that crease area.
Agreed. I agree. But it was more than a 2-minute minor, but I don't think it deserved, you know, in the NHL system, 15 minutes, you know, because you get a 10-minute. You get 10 minutes for a game misconduct. It didn't deserve that. I think it deserved the 5-minute major, and then go from there.
It's similar to a high stick where you got to be responsible for your stick at all times. You got to be responsible for your body and the contact that it makes in that situation.
And as I said, if you run into Nathan MacKinnon's thigh with your head, you're going down, and then you're going down and hitting the ice, and then that's a double whammy.
Knees, shins, thighs, man. There's not a lot of give in that when it's making contact with a player's helmet or a goaltender's mask. Did you learn anything today from Steve that you weren't aware of?
I think
the flinching thing blows me away.
I'm gonna phone a couple of my producer friends to tell them that you should try this. Every once in a while, television doesn't experiment very often.
That's a hard shot to get, isn't it?
Yep,
it is. Of a goaltender making a save.
But there are great cameramen out there that could do it. And, you know, all it needs is a couple, and you go, wow, he's right. Yeah. If he can do it with his iPad, you know, or his GoPro, why can't we do it with really good cameras and big lenses? So the one that I think I will go back to is I was always one of those guys that you pick a goalie and live with him through the playoffs. you know, and if you change goalies, you are creating conflict and you are losing confidence in one guy. But the whole concept of the, you're going to have, he said something at one point, Steve said, you know, analytics people tell you they have seven good outings in a row.
Yeah.
And so be aware. Did you know that before? Seven outings?
No.
Okay. So seven good outings in a row.
I'm at just agreeing that that's what he had said.
Yeah. Seven outings in a row. And then, you know, as a coaching staff, do you have a red flag and saying, okay, as good as he's playing, we should watch. We should watch that. Particularly in the playoffs.
Okay. So I'll run through teams right now. That are playoff teams. Okay. Do they qualify for the alternate?
Is their second goalie good enough to play is what you want to know.
Yeah, platooning, if you want to use that term. Buffalo? Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Tampa Bay?
No.
You would probably not go that direction.
No.
Montreal? For sure.
Yes.
Carolina? For sure. Should ask them about Brandon Bussey. That's my bad. Pittsburgh? Yeah.
Islanders? Yeah. Shelov and Skinner. Oh, no, not the Islanders. No.
Detroit?
Boy, oh boy. I got nervous when Dave Riddick took the hat off last night. he did. He took the hat off. Oh, my God. He's going to. Thank goodness. Do you realize how close the Islanders came last night to changing goalies, but they reviewed the goal and it was offside?
I love the fact that they
waited. Changed the whole complexion.
I so many times coaches will make the change before the ruling comes in, and then they're stuck with making the change. Patrick, good on you.
Yeah, no, but and then Riddick almost it was all Riddick almost said Pat, yeah. No.
Wait, you've seen it before, where the coach makes a change and then the goal is called back, and you're like, did they not put the other guy back in? How about in the West, Colorado? Yep.
Oh yeah, there are those are the wood boys. Yeah.
Dallas.
Well, I would have said no, but I mean, and yeah, and so
I love Casey DeSmith too. I'm a big fan. Minnesota, yeah. Yes. Anaheim.
No, Dustal is that good. Come on.
Edmonton, yes. Vegas.
You might have. I tell you what. Don't laugh. They may play three goalies in the playoffs in Edmonton.
Utah, Seattle. Yeah. There's a ton of
Seattle for sure if they get there. Utah, I think Utah is Malka. Going with Vemelka.
Juice?
Is that what you call him?
Isn't that his nickname?
I thought it was Lettuce or something like that.
Lettuce. Maybe that's it.
Juice. That's LA, UC Soros. That's UC Soros. Soros.
LA San Jose? Yeah.
LA's got to be Kemper, but although Forsberg's been good.
More than I thought would qualify.
I was actually going to ask him about San Jose with Askarov and Nedeljkovic, but I think if they're going to get to the playoffs, because they're not going to last long in the playoffs, you have to give Askarov the experience,
right?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I would do. But, you know, all the years that I coached the National League, so.
Imagine going to Home Depot, grabbing a 2x4 and some nails and practicing flinching. I'm going to my garage right after this.
You know, by the way, you know when I'd flinch? When the hammer would miss the nail and hit my hand. That's what I'd flinch.
Hit my thumb.
Oh my God.
Like when he said that, every person listening and on this podcast is imagining, okay, can I do it? And it's hard. It'd be hard. Yeah. It sounds easy not to flinch when the hammer hits a nail, but that's.
Wow. So when you so if somebody says, "Well,
that dude just thinks differently," I love that part.
How did you start the puck? I don't know. My eyes were closed.
And if you're gonna practice that, get one of the nails with the big head on it. Don't get one of those little nails where it's just hard to hit.
crazy.
We'll talk to everybody next time. I hope you enjoyed this episode of 100% Hockey. I love the way you think, John. Love the way you think. You come at this thing from different angles, and you give us all kinds of stuff to talk about.
Listen, the game is fun. And as Steve said, we're in the entertainment business.
Comes down to the hammer and the nail, right? I know which one I am in this relationship.
Velvet hammer. Velvet hammer.
No way. Talk to you next time on 100% Hockey.